Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, May 17th, 2026, and this is episode 125. It is a gorgeous and sunny day here in Nashville. We had rain overnight last night, which really has cleared the air quite nicely from all that pollen that was making everyone miserable. Our garden is showing out right now, with the highlight being the orange bloom of the flame azalea. If you are a student of Tennessee State Parks and their history, one thing is clear. We owe a great debt of gratitude to Franklin Roosevelt and his New Deal programs. Virtually all of the early and foundational parks were a product of the New Deal programs, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the Works Project Administration, and so forth. Today we are going to talk with Mark Houston, who is the park manager of Cumberland Mountain State Park, which is located just south of Crossville, Tennessee, on the edge of the Cumberland Plateau. This park was the work product of the Civilian Conservation Corps, and is often featured in picture books because of the picturesque Crab Orchard Stonework Bridge and dam located there. Since 1988, the state park has been on the National Register of Historic Places as a contributing element of the Cumberland Homesteads Historic District. Recently, the park has assumed control of an important collection of buildings associated with the Cumberland Homesteads project. This property is just a short distance from the park itself and consists of a distinctive octagonal water tower and adjacent structures which had previously been a small museum dedicated to telling the story of the Cumberland Homesteads. And so today we learn a little bit more about all this and the challenges and opportunities presented in managing these remarkable and important historic sites. And so I hope you will enjoy this conversation with Mark Houston. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
So, Mark Houston, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, sir.
Mark, it's really fun to meet you in person. I have been following you on Facebook for a couple years because I try to follow what's going on in the parks. And you came into parks after I had left parks, so I don't think I ever met you personally. But thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast and talk with me today. And I want to talk with you about what's going on with the Cumberland Homesteads and the recent activity there. Before we get into that, Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up and how did you get involved in conservation? What was your inspiration to be involved in conservation?
Well, like I said, thank you for having me. It's my journey here at Cumberland Mountain started back in 1995. I grew up in Cumberland County, so this is my hometown park. I have a lot of visitors always ask me. They're like, "Have you bounced around?" And I've not. I'm in my 31st year here, and it's the only park I've ever worked at. I've never sought to go anywhere else, but as a young child growing up in the county, the park was just an access for us to be outside. I never knew how good I would have it in the sense of being able to work here and have the longevity of this career. But I can say that me and my brother and all my friends, the park pretty much raised us. So we would come out here every day. My brother, it's kind of funny. My brother would, when he was like 11 years old, he looked like he was 19, and he would drive us to the park. We never got pulled over or anything like that. And we'd come out here, and we have my best friend lived at the back of our property, and it's called the Coonhalla Lane area, and we own Coonhalla Cabin. So that cabin is a it's a historical homestead cabin, and the park acquired it back in the 70s. So my buddy, he lived behind it, and we would go to his house, and then we were on the park property in about 20 steps. So the park pretty much raised us.
Very good. Now, Mark, did you where did you go go for schooling?
I started out at Roane State when I graduated from Cumberland County High School. Went to Roane State for 2 years, and I've got a kind of a weird, every degree I have is in business. I've got my bachelor's was in business administration, and I got my MBA back in 2019 in from Bethel University. I did all that online. And if you remember, one of the main, I think my president there, he was part of Tennessee State Parks back in the day, and my mind has went blank on Walter Butler. That's who the
Oh, I
president
remember
was.
Walter Butler, of
You remember?
course.
Yeah. Andy always talked a lot highly of Walter, and he was the president at Bethel. And so I got my MBA there, and I've had it trying to, I just got park manager, so I'm hoping that my MBA helps me in this role.
Well, you know, people come into parks from all kinds of backgrounds, and as I've talked to park leadership, you know, we have folks with focus on historic preservation. We have folks on archaeology. We have, you know, foresters, botanists, all kinds of folks, and of course, people that do park and recreation administration. But a business background is essential for anybody to manage, you know, an important asset like Cumberland Mountain. You know, Cumberland Mountain, just for maybe the listeners who would not know what we're talking about, you are the manager at Cumberland Mountain State Park, which is just to the south of Crossville, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about that park and its amenities that it has.
So Cumberland Mountain is, I like to call us a traditional park. We're 1,720 acres. We've got about 16 miles of trails. But what we are best known for, if you look us up on the web, every picture will be the CCC 7 Arch Bridge. So the Civilian Conservation Corps. Those young men, they broke out of Pickett State Forest, and they came here and became 3464, and they built this park. We have 37 cabins, 145 campsites. We have a wonderful restaurant. The restaurants just went to a plate menu. It used to be all buffet, and now they do buffet on Sundays. But COVID kind of hurt buffets across the country, so now we've adjusted into that plate special, and it's a really good, same type of food that we always served before, but we can manage what our expenses are a little bit better than what a buffet. We have mountain bike trails. We've back in the day when I was little, they used to have horseback riding on the trails, but the Bear Trace Golf Course, where it's built, that when Jack Nicklaus came in, he dedicated his name to five of those courses, and we were the first one opened in June of 1998. But that was where the riding stables used to be. So the horses would ride back off that property and come here and ride the trails. But the parks, what we're known for is that CCC Bridge. And the state historian, a lot of state archaeologists, Phil Hodge, those he made a great point when he said that the park is complete now that we own this homestead tower. So you can't really tell the story of the Cumberland homesteads without adding the tower and the park together. We go together. So that was one of the big draws for Cumberland Mountain. And as our park is growing, we are it has Speaker of the House Cameron Sexton is our state rep here, and he is fighting hard for us to try to get an inn here. So we would love to have a about a 40-room inn that Fall Creek Falls, Montgomery Bell, Natchez Trace, Pickwick Landing, Paris Landing, and Henry Horton all have inns, and they are considered resort parks. So if we get that inn, I would say we would be on a smaller level of a resort park just because we have all these amenities.
And that golf course is that still operational? The
It
golf
is.
course? Okay.
They've gotten rid of, there's Harrison Bay, and let's see here, Tim's Ford still has a Jack Nicklaus,
And I think
And HUD,
Chickasaw was taken off the list.
Chickasaw and Ross Creek got taken away.
Right.
So that we, those three are still with Jack's name and great design. A lot of people love them because there's no homes on them. So it
I
gives you
see
the
what you mean. Okay. Very good. Well, all right. So we are, if we're in Crossville and we go south, and I guess that's Highway 127. Is that the
Yes,
Is
sir.
that, am I right
127
about
South.
that? You will come to an intersection where there's a prominent building there that is a water tower. And there's adjacent buildings, all constructed of the traditional crab orchard stone. And the building is picturesque, isn't it, Mark?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And if you and I'm going to try as best I can to post a picture of this water tower area along with this interview, so that people will have a visual of it. But there's lots of pictures of it on the internet if you want to go and look and search for the Cumberland Homestead. How and it's and as long as I have been in parks, which goes back to the late 70s. I've always driven past that and thought, well, I wonder why that's not part of the park, because it seems to be a prominent feature, but it's always been run by Roane County or owned by Roane County up until very recently. So, how did that come to pass now that Parks has acquired ownership and management of that property?
So, the as Cumberland County, as they own the structure, they would lease it to the Homestead Tower Association. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, and that association would go through their board members. You know, they just like what you think a traditional board would be, president be on there for 2 years, and as they've had people turn over through the years, that was a leased operation from the county for $1. And I want to say they would sign that on like a 3 to 5 year contract. So it was very, it's something that the county says, hey, you guys will run it, manage it, and promote it. And it was just a staple to the lower, south end of the county here. Well, the president that was enacting whenever we got this idea of us taking it over was Miss Brenda Lyon. And Miss, I'm sorry, Miss Brenda, she was married to Andy Lyon, my first park manager. Then she married Mr. Tony King. So Miss Brenda King became president, and she was a school teacher at Homestead. She's a kindergarten teacher till she retired. She might have had 30 plus years in as an educator. So she grew up every day she'd go up there and she'd see as she's pulling into her classes, like, hey, here's the Homestead Tower. And lo and
Well, that's
behold,
little
she was.
schools right there adjacent to that tower, isn't it?
That's right. It's right.
I'd
It's on the
forgotten
same
that. I'd
ground.
forgotten that. Okay.
It's on the same ground. So whenever me and her got to talking, and she was always very forward looking at how they would generate enough revenue to keep the tower operational. So they would charge $6 for if you came in, they'd $6 a head to come into the place. And that helped them, with all their expenses, such as water and electricity and internet and everything else, buying merchandise. So they would have every, if you remember this, Mr. Mark, they would have what's called the Apple Festival. And it was the third Saturday of September every year. So this Apple Festival was such a big draw to the community. They would put some fencing around the property, and they would charge you $5 for the weekend. It'd be a Saturday
Okay.
Sunday event, and they would have music, and they would have old timey games, and just all kinds of stuff, crafts, and they'd sell apples, and that was how they generated money. Well, they ran into just a bad weather front on that day. It was hard for them to get people to sign up and say, hey, I can do it on this Saturday, but they might not be able to do it a Saturday before or after, weather permitting. So this one Saturday it rained out. I mean, it rained and rained and rained. So they were looking and saying, we do not have enough revenue to go forward. So we need to come back and think about how this will how we're going to operate the tower. And that's when we got together and I said, How about we go and see if the county and Mayor Alan Foster, let's see if they will let the park have it. Just give it to us, donate it to us. We will operate it, run it. It'll be ours forever. It'll be something open to the community and the public and everybody. So we went before the county commission and their maintenance board. When they looked at it, they said we would love to give it to the state of Tennessee. So it was about a year long process of trying to get our ducks in a row. And then
I
once
would
we
presume, Mark, that you had to go into central office and pitch this idea to somebody there too, huh?
did. Bill Avent was the gentleman that I talked to. I'd had a few interactions with Bill, and he is a wonderful asset to the state of Tennessee because he walked me through so much stuff, and he said, "Hey, we'll have a council meeting, and you'll be able to present this, what you guys are trying to take on." And every one of them, I don't think any of them was, in the negative on it. They said, "Yes, this will be one of those projects that, you can imagine, Mr. Mark, how they sometimes have people try to give something to the state of Tennessee, and they're
Oh,
like,
exactly, exactly.
just don't meet what our needs are." Well, this was one of those where they could not wait to sign off on it. So
Well,
it
it's the building and those premises. Am I wrong that they are on the National Register of Historic Places?
yes, and I had this was a big education process for me. The tower is on the national, it's on the historical National Registry, and some of the houses are, but that don't mean they all are. So
Okay.
if you owned one and wanted to tear it down, you could. And
Now,
I was under the
let's for our listeners who may not be aware of what you're talking about.
okay.
Th this but let me start by saying this. If our listeners will go to the most recent edition of the Tennessee Conservationist, there's an excellent article by Louise Zepp that sets all these facts out about the history of the Homestead Project and Eleanor Roosevelt and her involvement in this project. But there was such a thing as the Homestead Project. And it
Yes.
wasn't just about building the park, and it wasn't just about this water tower and the adjacent buildings. But it was to set out a couple hundred homes for people to live in. Tell us about
Yes.
that.
So if you dig into your history, you're coming out of the New Deal. This is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he is coming through the Great Depression. So he is looking for ways to stimulate the economy. And here in Cumberland County, coal mining was a big, big occupation. And when that seized a lot of these homesteaders, they were, looking for any kind of occupation to live. And it's, these young men and the families, they were absolutely, it was poverty. I mean, they were people living in barns. So what was really neat about FDR, he sent Eleanor to do a lot of his jobs because she was so smart. She's probably she's my favorite first lady. But what she could do, she could really come and she had a big heart for people. And these
She got with
250,
the people, didn't she? Yeah.
yes, she was absolutely, with veterans, your public, everything. And he captured that audience with her. So when these Cumberland homesteads came to be, it was about a 10,000 acre tract of land. And they said, what we'll do, you had to be of good standing. You had to have good character. And they would go and sign up, and this was an agricultural community. So they said, we'll let you have the land. You will have anywhere from 5 to 50 acres, and you can build your barn first and live with your livestock in those barns, and then you would construct these homes. And they were called the Cumberland Homestead Project. And the homes were made out of that same crab orchard stone that you will find up here on the Cumberland Plateau. And there's only one other place in the world, in China, that you can find this type of porous sandstone. So if you and me were to dynamite take off the topsoil and dynamite down, we're going to find this sandstone everywhere. And it's rich in iron ore.
Up on top of that mountain. Yeah,
That's
that's right.
right. So as the iron ore, it's just beautiful. Once they cut it and you can polish it up a little bit, they would face the rock to give it a design, and that's what they build all the homesteads of, and that's what the tower, the Homestead Elementary School, a lot of your buildings in Cumberland County have that Crabwood stone. So as the project got to be more popular, you had what FDR, he says, you know, he started TVA, he started the WPA, he was instrumental in starting a lot to give people hope. And he would send Eleanor, and whenever they were something that you saw a project that was really, really doing good, she came and commended them for working so hard, these homesteaders. And that's how this tower came to be. Now, you're correct. It was going to be a water tower, but when she got here and she saw how beautiful these homes were, they were kind of like a, she would call them a cottage.
Right.
And it had that
Maybe
design.
600 square feet.
Yes, they were only like four bedrooms. All of them have a one bedroom downstairs and two bedrooms upstairs. So maybe 600 square feet, and you didn't, you know, they plan to have TVA to run electricity to them, but if you were real smart, you would build it over your well. So some of them had your well outside, but a lot of them would build it over their well where you'd have water inside.
Good grief.
And the
And that was
four that
a big time feature back in the day, wasn't it?
you, if you came in and somebody didn't have to go outside to go get you some water for anything, they thought, oh, these people are uptown. So here's Mr. Mark, here's something that's neat about the tower. It's got 97 steps to the top, and it shows where that water tower was encased. But as they went on up, you were at the top. You can, there's windows all around, and if you do your circumference around there, you were able to see the original homesteads at the time. So there were, you'd go up and you could see the properties of how these houses were being built. And if you look at some old pictures, you could tell that those land tracts were where people would grow their gardens and so forth, or
Right.
they'd have their livestock, or they might have sweet corn or green beans, things like that.
It was sort of an early planned community.
Yes, and what made it such a draw for it was you get such good seasons. Now we're kind of in a drought right now, but you can imagine. You would cut two sessions of hay up here on the Cumberland Plateau. So you got your cool mornings, you got your midday would be warm, and then it get cool at night. So your everything was such a growing opportunity for it. And I want to say, whenever the homestead families, that was the homestead school, went from kindergarten to high school. My grandfather said he went to all 12 grades out there, and they used the homestead towers bottom rooms. There's four rooms that kick off of that,
Little
and they
meeting
would use
room
that
areas,
as their school rooms. So sometimes some of your classes would be there. And then when the park was being built, the government offices were used up there to, that's where your leadership was. And they would travel a mile down and they'd see the barracks to the boys and for the CCC. So a lot of great history here.
So, how many of these homestead residences are still surviving? Do you know?
Oh, that's a great question. Our museum curator up there, Wren Sexton, I've asked her that, and she said it's hard to get a like the homes as you ride around now. Out of the 250 families, you might have half of that that's still existing, and the families are passionate about it. But you think about this too, Mr. Mark. If I was giving you a tour of this community around here, a lot of people have built onto those homestead houses.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
if you tie it in right, you can really make it nice. And then some of them, they just go back with vinyl. But the ones that actually go back and add more Crab Orchard sandstone and face the building, they can really tie it in super nice. So I would say there's half of them that's still around. We had one that actually burned not too long ago, and it's in the Linary community. But you know, if you and me travel from here 4 or 5 miles, you still get toward Crab Orchard, you get in Deep Draw Road, you get away from the actual tower experience, and you still see those homestead houses that
They'll be
go all over.
unutilized.
Yes, all over the landscape.
So, Mark, now that the Parks Administration has control, let's just say, of this property, how are you going to be staffing it? Are you still going to be relying on volunteers to do that, or are you going to bring in park staff, or what? How is that going to work, or do you even know yet?
Sure. That's a great question. And this is something that's been in my mind. As I've studied on it,
I'll bet it has.
and as I come in, here's what's amazing. So as Tennessee State Parks are growing and so forth, one of my area managers, he's actually a director now. His name's Kim Moore. And when he was the area manager, he came in and we have, you would know what it's called, job share positions. So
Sure. Yeah.
these job shares, you might have a 3 month position, 6 months, you didn't ever 9 months, you never got a full year. Well, about 3 years ago, he got us all where it's 1950 hours. So we're not full time, but it was full time hours.
Okay.
So that allows me to work people up to that capacity, those 1950 hours. So the tower will be open through the summer months. I would say starting about March, when I would be getting some spring breakers from surrounding counties or states, I would go from, like, say, the 1st of March, and then about the middle of December, I would have to close it down or go on a limited basis because they just won't get as much viewership from that. People during that time of the year, the park gets slow, and of course, you're getting into winter, you could have some bad weather. And just recently, we had a water line bust this past winter above the restroom, and then I've just had some maintenance challenges, so I'm hoping to get all that fixed. We got a great
You're
maintenance guy
speaking
here.
of you're speaking of maintenance challenges at that site itself,
Yes,
not down
sir.
at the park. Okay.
Yes, sir.
So,
Yes, sir.
okay.
So it will be open. It will be open through the heavy visitation. What I would say the park is. When my campgrounds start getting busy around the middle of March to April, that's when I'll open that facility because I want people to go and enjoy it as much as they'll come here. And I've got some exciting things going on with it. I will not have a entrance fee. It's, at the
I was going
$6,
that was going to be my next question. Was it
it'll be
were you going
free.
to charge? Yes.
It'll be free. And what I will do to make revenue up there is I will have a small gift shop. So I would think the gift shop alone, if I look at my figures here in our gift shop at the visitor center down in the park, we put a gift shop up there. It'll do 15 to 20,000 over what I'm purchasing. So I think it'll run well. I don't see any reason why I would want to charge an entrance fee for it. Now I will do some living history tours up there. So that might be where a patron can go online and look and say, hey, we're having a history talk and maybe a traveling tour from the tower down to the park and maybe to the Crabtree House, and that might a fee-based program, and that might be a charge of $10 a head, and
Sure.
that money could go into helping improvements of the facility. But we're already mowing, we're already taking care of it, and
Okay.
so it'll be staffed by a state park employee. Is as my positions change around. If I can get that into a full-time position, that's my goal. I would
Fair
love
enough.
to have a full-time position up there where somebody can operate it, run it, and just give more people your history tours and so forth.
I remember it's been years ago seeing a Tennessee Crossroads feature on this little museum that had been run by the county, as we were talking about earlier. And it had some artifacts in there, things that they had on display. And I'm searching around in my mind as an example, but it was the kind of thing that you might see a small not-for-profit group do, things that they collected from families and that sort of thing. I'm wondering if you have any ideas in mind about maybe enhancing that interpretive display there at that property.
Sure, and you're spot on. So those families, people would give donate pictures and artifacts and things like that. Some
That's
of the
right.
history that I tell of the park are in those shadow boxes up there, and they come from the Crossville newspaper back in the 40s. So those are some I tell a really good ghost story about our Coon Hollow cabin, and it all originates from those Cumberland homesteads. So it's really neat how that ties in. But if you've never been to our museum that's on site by our restaurant here, Mr. Mark, those panels, those interpretive panels and those shadow boxes, all of that was done through the interpretive program and division here
Right.
at Tennessee State Park. So the IP&E, I have reached out to they're right now, they've got an interim director. His name's Hobart Akins, and
I know Hobart, yes.
I've been in touch with him on trying to make our museum here on site kind of match. I'd like for the theme to flow together. I do want to enhance the boards. I love the pictures that families have gotten, but I think there's a way to Rolodex that, whether that's QR codes or something that's more technology based, where you can go in and maybe put on some headphones and listen to a small story of how this came to be and that stuff. I think that gets it more technical for our people, our viewers, and everybody that's coming into the place.
Right. Well, I have visited your little interpretive display there, as you say, by the restaurant, and it was quite impressive. Actually, Hobart Aiken has been a guest on this program
Okay.
before, and that it's been 2 or 3 years ago, but he at the time was in charge of the cultural resources management for all the state parks, having taken that job from Ward Weems.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't did you ever know Ward?
Yes,
Yeah.
I got to work with him, and Jeff
Yeah.
Wells took over as the director of the interpretive program and education division.
Right.
And when he retired, he came from Fort Loudoun, so
Right.
he was
Right.
a great interpreter there, and
Right.
he's still adamant. I mean, all those older generations of people that had such an influence on me, anything they do, if they give you some ideas, you try to implement that. And Hobart, he learned from the best, and he's one of the best. He is,
Yeah,
the history that
smart
he.
guy.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He's working on his PhD right now, so he's getting close to getting that.
So for our listeners, this podcast started back in 2017. And my very first guest was Bob Richards, who, as you know, is the
Yeah.
trails guy, right? My
Yes.
second guest was Ward Weems.
Okay.
Because of his knowledge about the cultural resources in Tennessee state parks. So those are references for my listeners that they may want to go back and dial up those interviews. They're still out there on the web to listen to. But well, you really have a challenge on your hands, and what a fun opportunity to interpret that wonderful site and to tell that story about Eleanor Roosevelt and the New Deal and all of that. Of course, you've been doing that all along with the park itself, but this is a whole different and new dimension to it.
Yes, sir. I tell you, whenever I do I have a group that comes in every month, and it's neighbors and newcomers, and they come through John Conrad. I call it Conrad Tours, and I get 20 couples that come in, and I get to tell them that story and the picture of Eleanor standing on the back of a flatbed truck addressing the community at
Oh
the
my.
Homestead Tower. I get to tie that in to how vital it was for the economy. A lot of people don't know that FDR, he's the only president that had 4 terms, and he was very strategic in where he put his CCC camps. Because if you said, hey, I don't want it here because I don't want a bunch of young men running around and causing a ruckus, trying to date our local young ladies and stuff like that, he said, okay, don't worry about it. But you're losing $5,000 a month to your economy, because that's what those boys will be spending coming into, say, Cumberland County. So that turned their ears around a little bit, and the county mayor said, we would love to have a CCC camp on the end of 127 down there on the south. But here's another funny story, Mr. Mark. Those young men on Fridays, they'd work like 8 to 4:30, 8 to 5. Well, on Fridays they would want to come to town and Blow off a little steam, go to the movies, do whatever. But some of the local boys would come out here and set fires on the park, so they
Oh
couldn't. They'd
no.
have to fight fire all weekend, so they
Oh
couldn't come to
no.
town.
Oh no. That's
So
funny.
I hope nobody comes out here and sets any fires on, especially as dry as it is. But we still love to tell the stories of what the park, how it came to be and grew up, and how it. We just hope to portray the history of Cumberland County, the tower, and obviously Cumberland Mountain State Park.
Dynamite. Mark, I'm going to let you go here in just a second, but before I do, are you involved with the Camp Tanasi project?
Yes, sir. I was
Tell us
I was
about that, and we may have to do another show just to talk about that. But
I would love to. I'd love to do another show. Camp Tanasi was something that came between a very good friend of mine, Jeremy Vaden, and myself. We were at Montgomery Bell one night. We were on assignment there. A bunch of rangers were doing some work, and our shift was about 4 in the morning. So me and him rode up through that campground, and it was where they have Ernest Goes to Camp was filmed there, and
right.
it is a rentable structure. Pat Wright was the park manager at that time. He has since retired, and Destiny Adcock is the new manager there, and she was part of Camp Tanasi with us. And Heather McGee is she's in the marketing team out of Tennessee State Park. So when we came around and we said we should have a overnight junior ranger camp, and we were struggling on the name, and Jeremy came up with, how about Tanasi? That's the Cherokee word for Tennessee, and it means a bend in the river. And we said, let's do it. Let's go with it. So Camp Tanasi came between two park rangers riding around at 4 in the morning looking at this. And our first camp had 23 children in it. And we thought it was we didn't know what was going to do. And we were having to, and this is a special part of it, we were having to go by and get donations to have funding for shirts, food, anything we had. We were having to just go and ask for those donors. Well, one night, Mickey Eldridge, she was the executive director of the Good Samaritans here in town, and I went by her campsite, her and Mr. John, her husband, and I said, I'm looking for anything, Miss Mickey, to get a formal somebody to sponsor Camp Tanasi. And she got me in touch with her board out there, Melinda Kelsey and Connie Harden were on the board, and they just took it up. They were all state. They all worked with the state. Miss Connie was she worked up out of the House of Representatives. She was in there. She told me she would write the checks to the House representatives when they come in every Friday. She'd write their checks to them and hand them.
I know Connie quite well. In fact, Connie used to work in the d personnel division at the old conservation department.
Okay, there
Yes,
and
yes.
amazing lady, her and Mr. Andy,
Yes.
her husband, and then Chief of Staff was. I think she was in the Department of Labor, was Melinda Kelsey, and she was as these three ladies. I'm telling you, Mr. Mark, you can't once you put a dream in front of some people that are movers and shakers, people that really go, they took off. And it happened one night that the Speaker of the House was at a high school basketball game, and Miss Mickey and myself went up and asked him and said, we'd love to have a sponsorship for Camp Tanasi. And he said, what are you looking at? And we said, well, we're just wanting to sponsor it where the kids can come, and it be a fun week. It's an overnight camp. And he said, hey, I love it, I'll work on it. And next thing you know, we got a $50,000 grant from TDEC, and he got it reoccurring for us. So now we work out of a budget of 50,000, and we bring in about anywhere from 50 to 60 children. It's always the second week of July, and
And
we
where do
bring
you recruit the children from?
them. We send it out. We hit a lot of your Facebook posts, like you can think, or social media, Instagram, and as we promote that, they flood it through our markets. And the children are from 10 to 14 years of age, so we try to divide that up
Okay.
with 30 young ladies and 30 young men. And then what's special about it is in Tennessee State Parks, you'll know this right here. Back in the day, there were recreators, and there were your seasonals were recreators or naturalists. So
Right.
now that's called SIR. It's a seasonal interpretive ranger. So these
Correct.
SIRs, they are junior to senior level young men and women that want to be park rangers potentially. So we use them as our counselors. So we'll get anywhere from 15 of those. We try to have two counselors per group, and they'll have about 8 to 10 of those young men and women that are in that group. And we'll keep the 10 and 11 year olds together and so forth. But when we come together and eat, we're one big group. Whenever we do our activities, we divide them up, and it's anywhere from horseback riding to canoeing. They do a lot of rappelling off part of the structures there. I mean, it's hiking. It's everything, Mr. Mark, you would think an overnight junior ranger camp would be. And it's something that's it's grown and grown. For I think COVID, this will be our 6th year, I think. COVID knocked us out 1 year, but it's the camp is up and running, and it's really special to me because it started between two park rangers just having a goal of getting kids off of their phones. And that's one of the things that we've implemented. We said you can have your phone at night for 1 hour, but the rest of the time, unless it's an emergency, we take your phones and we keep them in a they keep them in a the counselor's cabin. And if a child at night needs to call a parent or something, that's no problem at all. But we're trying to get rid of the devices during that time. And I mean, they do tie-dye and shirts. I mean, it's just ranger led. We take them one day, we take them down the Harpeth River in canoes. So it's a true
Well,
outside.
we may need to spend another whole session about that camp, but Montgomery Bell State Park is where this is happening, and this is another park that was done by the Civilian Conservation Corps and Work Project Administration, and
Yes.
has the same sort of features. And that old group camp had been really underutilized for many, many years, but for listeners, there's a movie called Ernest Goes to Camp. And this is where this movie was it's a comedy, and this is where this movie was filmed. And that actually was filmed during during my tenure as director of state parks.
Oh, wow.
So it was really a fun thing to have. But go ahead.
I will say this, Mr. Mark. We show them that movie on about the Thursday night, and they have
That's fun.
s'mores and ice cream and popcorn, and we show them that movie, and they are amazed to know that they have all their lunch, dinner, and breakfast in that facility that Ernest and all those kids in that movie's at. So that's a neat part of it.
That is fun. Well, I'm afraid I've got some noise in the background here. We've got some construction going on right here next to my house. So, well, Mark, you are just a dream to talk to. Thank you so much for your time today and for talking to us about what's going on there at Cumberland Mountain. And for our visitors, for our listeners, get up and see the Tennessee State Parks and especially Cumberland Mountain. If you get up into that ne neighborhood, it is absolutely worthwhile. So, Mark, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Mark, and let's get together soon.